Welcome to the Inspired Living with Autoimmunity podcast, the podcast for high achievers who want to stay sharp, focused, and full of energy despite their diagnosis. With your host, National Board Certified Functional Medicine Health Coach, Julie Michelson, where Julie helps you take your power back from autoimmunity. And now here's your host, Julie Michelson.
Welcome back to the Inspired Living with Autoimmunity podcast. I'm your host, Julie Michelson. And today I am joined by Betty Murray, nutrition expert, PhD researcher, certified functional medicine practitioner, and speaker. Betty helps women over 40 harness their hormones to lose weight, optimize sleep, restore energy, and thrive through her hormone reset program. She is the host of the Menopause Mastery podcast and the founder and CEO of Living Well Dallas Functional Medicine Center and the Coming Into Our Own project. In today's conversation, we are talking about, you guessed it, hormones. Not only the connection between hormones and autoimmunity, but the importance of hormone balance and the role that lifestyle plays in optimizing health. Listen in to find out how we both feel better in our 50s than we did in our 40s. Betty, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me, Julie. I'm so excited.
I am as well. This is one of my favorite topics to talk about. I always love to start with story because I'm guessing this is not what you were dreaming about doing when you were a little girl. So how did you enter this world?
You know, so that it is a circuitous route, which I think a lot of us in this community really were on. Actually, at one point, I did want to be a doctor, you know, child of the late 80s. And I actually chose not to do that because at the time I was like, that's too much school. I don't want to be in school that long. You know, I was like, I liked business. And so I went and got a business degree. But what really brought me to the functional medicine world was actually a diagnosis of colitis. I had these episodes of digestive things as a kid. And I think anybody that's in my age group, you know, growing up in the 70s and 80s, you know, if your limbs didn't fall off, your parents would be kind of like, dust you off, just keep going. And so it was always like, well, you're just sensitive, right? And then when I got into my 20s, it became much more pronounced. And go to gastroenterology, get diagnosed with colitis, which for anybody that doesn't know what that is, it's an autoimmune digestive disorder. And I asked what I thought was a very obvious question. Could I change my diet and change the trajectory of this disease? And this very obnoxious gastroenterologist, I'm just going to be really honest, he was very condescending. He barks this big laugh in my face and says, it has nothing to do with what you eat. I'm like, that's really interesting because if I don't eat, I start to get better. And so I just started, you know, changing my diet. I went back to school, went back and got prerequisites to get into a master's program for nutrition and kind of started down this road and ended up, you know, as soon as I got in there, I was like, oh my gosh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And I was actually in IT at that time, right? So okay. I was in a completely different field. It's paid off well over the years having that understanding. But I ended up going back and kind of getting into private practice. And so through my 30s, mid-30s and on, once I started my practice, everything was kind of okay with digestion until I hit about 38 going on 39. And it was like all of a sudden, every hormone problem that you could imagine occurred. I got cystic acne. My periods started getting heavier. I started losing hair, all kinds of stuff. And at that point, I'd already opened my clinic. I had functional medicine medical providers. We had been practicing and I sort of was down this sort of rabbit hole of, at the time was perimenopause, but it didn't occur to me that I was in it already,
right?
You know, that early, right? And so I had a really awful 40s. I'm just going to be really honest. I gained weight. I used to bodybuild, right? I know how to manipulate the body and doing the same things that I did before. All of a sudden, I gained 36, almost 40 pounds that I can't get rid of for almost a decade. And, you know, all different kinds of treatments and everything. And so I decided to go back and really study for my PhD because I wanted to understand our hormone interaction because, to be honest, we aren't really studied in medicine. And there's so much uniqueness. And so that's why I went back to get my PhD and I uncovered a bunch of things about our metabolism and what happens in perimenopause and menopause that leads to a lot of the concerns that we have. And so that's really kind of where my specialty has shifted is really helping women through this transition because of my own experience.
So amazing. You brought up literally, I think, my biggest pet peeve in traditional allopathic Western medicine, which is gastroenterologists who still to this day are telling patients it doesn't matter what you eat, or they're not even, you know, beyond that, patients that don't even know enough to ask, they're not asking, what are you eating? I have actually a client currently with UC, and he was told to avoid vegetables. That's what he was told to avoid. And it is like, oh my goodness. I mean, to me, and again, this is why we have these conversations. So I'm so excited that you're here. This is literally why I have the podcast, because I used to think I was really smart and I had no idea that they were totally wrong when they said there was nothing I could do about my rheumatoid arthritis, right? And then all those years, I have a million directions. I hope you have 5 hours, because I have lots of, you know, I think 3 years I kept saying, I think I have a thyroid problem. I think I have a thyroid problem. I think I have a thyroid. But then finally they were like, okay, you know, your TSH is off enough. Now we'll give you some, you know, Levo, which wasn't what I needed. And of course it was right in that perimenopause period. Yes, I already had autoimmunity. Yeah. And then, you know, it got worse. So I just love, I'm guessing your gut is good. Your weight is certainly great. And you don't look like you've hit your 40s yet. So
thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I actually, you know, it's funny. Yes, my gut, my UC is in remission without medication. Not that I haven't had flares, but I've only had like 2 in the last 20 years.
Wow.
Which is, I'm like, you know, I'm very specific. I'm gluten-free. I've been gluten-free for 20 years. And oddly enough, eggs will drive a significant uptick in activity.
Unfortunately, it's not odd. It is one of the foods that makes me the saddest when people do have that sensitivity, but it's so common in autoimmunity. It is definitely on the list of suspects.
Exactly.
Not, you know, gluten is to me across the board. So I'd be curious to hear what anybody with an autoimmune diagnosis, what's your approach regarding gluten?
You know, I just look at it and say it's the only food that we know stimulates and cause the only actual autoimmune condition we know the cause of, right? So at the end of the day, and it has association with all those others. So if you look at the incidence of rheumatoid arthritis and celiac, you have a high correlation compared to not at all, right? Yeah, celiac and ulcerative colitis. So to me, I'm like, okay, this is a food that we've heavily changed by hybridization way, way back, right? To exhibit this protein, gluten, a lot. The other thing is we also do a lot of things in the U.S., and Cornell came out with this study looking at all the post-processing chemicalization that we do to the flour to give it a certain behavior, which makes it more immune stimulating. So to me, I'm like, okay, we don't need any more frankenfood in our diet. No. So for the most part, if you have an autoimmune condition, I would recommend taking it out and keeping it out. And generally speaking, I don't tell people that don't come back positive to a gluten sensitivity test or autoimmunity that they have to be gluten-free. But most people recognize when they remove it from their diet, or at least vastly, yeah, they feel better. So I'm like, who would eat stuff every day that makes you feel bad?
Right. But most people are eating it and don't realize that it's a contributing factor to how they feel. So
exactly.
You know, unless you're working with somebody, you may not understand. I know I'm always kind of roll the dice at everybody, and I respect everybody's perspective. It is the one food that I recommend across the board with my clients, you know, that is, it just becomes, I want people to do the reintroduction so they feel it.
Yep. Yeah. You got to go through it.
10 years, they don't care what Julie told them to eat. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. But it is to me something that, you know, if you have autoimmunity and you do the work to heal your gut, why would you put that back in?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I agree. I love that. There's so many directions. Let's talk about perimenopause a little bit. First of all, like you said, it wasn't really on your radar. It's not usually on people's radar in their 30s, yet it's not that uncommon that people are noticing changes in their 30s.
Right. You know, I remember when I was in school, you know, it was a class, and one of the instructors said a geriatric pregnancy is a pregnancy after 29, you know, and I'm in my mid 30s. And I was like, I'm still not mature enough for children. You know what I mean?
I think that those two words should never be, I know they are still used. They should never be used together, geriatric and pregnancy.
Yeah. But I think, we look at that and we go, okay. And there's some really great companies out there that are really working on ways to preserve ovarian function long-term, right? But the reality is we were not designed to live that long.
Right.
You know, 200 years ago, our lifespan was less than 40. 150 years ago at the turn of the century, or 125, at the turn of the century, our average lifespan was 57 years, yeah. Right? So if you went through menopause at like average age of 52, who cares? Like, it's like you didn't live very long. But now we're living 30, 40 years after that, right? And so the reality is for a lot of us, that may start early, right? We may actually start to experience that. And what's really driving it is changes in the two major hormone groups that drive our cycle and our fertility. And in most cases, that perimenopause that's starting is actually the decline of the hormone that has the highest spike in the second half of your cycle. So right in the middle of the cycle, generally, we have ovulation, which is driven by luteinizing hormone, pituitary hormones called luteinizing hormone and FSH, follicular stimulating hormone, and then a peak of estrogen. And then as the egg pops out, because that's what makes the egg pop out, right? Then that follicle kind of closes in on itself and it makes a hormone called progesterone. Well, what happens is we don't always have an egg pop out. And so we don't get the collapsing and we get a reduction in progesterone, which is the second hormone that helps make sure that everything's sort of prepared in the uterus, yep, for implantation, right? To grow, yep, a baby. And so when progesterone starts to decline, we now have estrogen and progesterone out of balance to each other. And so often you'll see symptoms like cystic acne. I was getting this horrible acne along my chin and jawline, you know, that was painful. And, you know, my hair started thinning and insomnia, that I was never a good sleeper, which is a whole nother conversation. But what was kind of poor sleep became just horrifyingly bad. And, you know, mood swings, my periods started getting closer together. Right. So as I enter into my 40s, they were every 21 days. So I was like, well, that's awesome.
This is not great.
Right. So like every other 2 weeks, I've got something going on. And so what women need to understand is that process of hormone changings that we often use the word menopause around, is that the average woman has 7 to 8 years of that, which means some of us are outliers. We get 15 and some of us might get like 1 to 2, right? Yeah. but it is because of those hormone changes, and we get gaslighted by Western allopathic medicine that it's just a headspace problem. You got a depression, right, issue, an anxiety issue, or you just need to get yourself together and do some cognitive behavior therapy.
Yeah. Or the other thing that people are, women are told all the time, yes, after they're offered the antidepressant that they may refuse, is this is just part of being a woman.
Yeah. Deal with it.
Too bad. So sad. So I want to talk about, if you're willing to go there, yeah, this idea of optimal hormone balance, yeah, versus what somebody who is even older than you grew up hearing. You know, again, that's part of being a woman, right? Rough cycles, heavy bleeding, you know, breast tenderness, the mood swings. I'm not even talking perimenopause. I'm talking in general.
Yeah.
But I want to talk a little bit about the role of that balance between progesterone and estrogens and how that affects us.
Yeah. So, you know, so estrogen's job is to really prepare the uterine lining. So what it does is sort of flood, think of it as a uterus lining. It's going to flood that area with blood, right? Sort of prep it. And then progesterone is kind of there to finish making the garden fertile for implantation, right? So we can grow a fetus into a human being. And a lot of this experience, here's the reality. All of us have variability in our hormones, right?
Sure.
So I remember, you know, I was kind of a little scrawny kid until I hit puberty. And it was kind of like everything exploded at once. So I kind of went both directions at once. So I got a booty on me and I got boobs. Like over a summer, it was all of a sudden like...
Well, you balanced at least.
Yeah, it balanced, but I went from like nothing to everything, right? And it was like, but I always wanted to have that little ballerina body. And I was like, I'm not, I'm stocky.
That's
and I've got
curves
everywhere. And so, you know,
feminine, it's a feminine figure, by the way.
Yeah, a very feminine figure. Yes, we prize this not this different hormonal balance figure in the West, but in a lot of other places, that's actually sought after because that also is a sign of fertility.
Right.
Just sort of a natural sign.
Yeah.
So, you know, so we have women that produce a lot more hormones, particularly estrogen, because that's the feminizing hormone. So the more curvy you are, we can say in general, the more likely you are, if we were tracking your hormones over time, we would see that the estrogen levels are pretty robust. Where a woman who might be, so I have a friend of mine who's very tall and willowy, so has narrow hips, very willowy, not big chested, those kind of things. Her estrogen levels relative to mine are likely lower. Still fertile, still all those other things, but lower.
Right.
So variability between women. But when we start to enter into like hormone changes, when those hormones aren't extremely balanced to each other, right? So progesterone and estrogen, particularly over that second half of the cycle, should kind of cycle together. So if all of a sudden that gap isn't consistent, then you start getting things like you might have situations where you don't have periods on a normal basis, often associated with polycystic ovarian syndrome. But there could be other reasons. And that means that you're not getting true ovulation. So the hormones aren't peaking to cause the egg to pop out of the egg carton. You could have situations where estrogen is high, progesterone doesn't make it there. So you might get fibroids, heavy periods, clotty periods, pain.
And you can have that, you know,
anytime.
As soon as you start cycling. And that's what I'm excited to dig into a little bit. Because again, Western medicine just doesn't look at, you know, if your estrogen falls in their range on their blood test,
mm-hmm.
they don't talk about estrogen dominance. You know,
no.
It's either high, you're either in range or out of range. And if you're in range, I never heard the words estrogen dominance until I found functional medicine. And it just, all of those symptoms of discomfort that so many, even young women, are dealing with. I'm not even talking about, you know, usually if you're already dealing with that, then, you know, perimenopause is really not going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
But just getting that progesterone, like you said, to follow estrogen, that second half of the cycle, literally can be life-changing. My daughter, I think, ran around her university campus, like telling her friends, like, you don't have to deal with that. You should go to a functional medicine doctor and get your hormones checked, right? Because again, to change that conversation of, we should just, you know, suck it up, buttercup, we're women and it's supposed to be miserable. It's not.
Right. Yeah. So a lot of us may already be that way. And actually, when most girls start their cycles, they are in an estrogen dominant state because we have to have a certain amount of body fat for our body to sort of turn that stuff on, right? Because that's a sign of fertility. And one of the enzymes that help us make testosterone into estrogen is also expressed in the fat cells. So there's a relationship to body fat and estrogen levels. That's a big thing for people to understand. And so the reality is the first year or two, often for girls, we have horrible, I remember my cycles just being awful. You know, just like you needed to stay home because it was a crime scene. And also you thought you were dying, right?
So right. It's
horrible.
Yeah. I must be hemorrhaging. Like,
right. You're like, no, this
I
is
can't
normal.
Have this much blood.
Right. But the problem is progesterone hasn't started regulating appropriately with estrogen. So often we get painful periods and it sort of normalizes. The reality is too, is a lot of times people will intervene and start birth control because it's inconvenient today.
Oh, can we go there? Please, because again, to me, this is the same, you know, here, take a biologic and maybe a steroid for your ulcerative colitis and don't change diet. And here, let's throw birth control pills. Why? You know, I am beyond a fan of bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. What is the difference when we're talking birth control, which is often, I mean, whether it's the pill or, you know, an implant, I mean, what they're doing to young girls is insane, I think, now that I know better. Let's talk about that a little bit. Why don't we want to just throw kids on the pill to regulate their cycles?
Yeah. So, you know, so birth control was really designed to do exactly what that is, right? Which is to avoid an unwanted pregnancy. Right. And, without getting into political things and things like that, it's important for girls and women to be able to regulate their own fertility, right? Because that's a human right at the very end. But it's particularly in the last 30 years, it has become kind of, oh, if you have periods, that's just, you know, that's frustrating and annoying. So let's suppress them. Or it's for acne, or it's for convenience, or it's because they're painful. And often we can do things nutritionally and other ways that make a lot of those symptoms better, and they just don't go into it in conventional medicine. But the reality is birth control pills essentially stop you from ovulating. So they make your body think that you are in a menopausal state, right? So 17 years old, getting it for acne, but your body's operating as if it's menopausal. When we look at the data, so if you look at the research out there, the women who are on preventative birth control, whether it's for acne or whatever, starting at a younger age, particularly younger ages, have more likelihood to be put on antidepressants, sleep medications, you know, those kind of things. So you look at that and you go, well, why is that? I'm like, let's see, that's the first line defense in the last 20 years for women going through menopause. Because instead of fixing the problem, which is the hormones being gone, they're covering up the symptoms of having no hormones, right? So the challenge is if we're using those medications to convenience a menstrual cycle, we probably will also then end up having to stack medications, because mood problems are often part of that. Sleep issues are a part of that. And, you know, and you don't know what you don't know. So I'm going to explain kind of why I say that. I went on birth control when I went into college. I was like, okay, you know, I want to make sure that if I choose to be sexually active, I don't have an oops. I want to have my life and my career how I want to do it. And so I did that, but my mood was bad, right? And I just thought that's me being in my 20s. And, it got worse and worse. So I was actually in the clinical trial that trialed Seraphim, which is Lexapro, or I'm sorry, Zoloft, pardon me, Zoloft for PMDD. Which is a very bad, very bad version of PMS. We'll put it that way. Because I was always like, man, if I said what was going on through my head,
they would lock me up.
They would lock me up. But I was in this space where I was like, you know, every 2 weeks out of the month, I would just be in this horrible mental space. And so I was looking for answers. And I was also, I liked research. And so I was like, oh, I'll be a research guinea pig. I'll try it. And I was put on this medication, kept on birth control. And actually, I got to the point where I withdrew myself from the study because they kept raising the dose. Because I was like, it's not helping, it's not helping, it's not helping. But I got to the point actually where I was having serotonin syndrome, which you can see outwardly because I was grinding my teeth. You know, so if you've ever seen somebody doing things like ecstasy, that's why their jaw moves like that, because it's too much of that circulating. So they had overdosed me, and I had gotten to the point where I was being overdosed, and I also didn't care about anything in my life. I'm like, okay, so I'm not feeling suicidal and also homicidal at the same time, but I also don't care.
Right.
And I was like, I'd rather have all of that than none of that. But it didn't ever occurred to me that it was basically the birth control pill that put me into like a fake menopause.
It's from the beginning.
This is it. You know, on top of my gut stuff and everything else, I was just like, oh my gosh. You know, so a lot of times women may be experiencing these symptoms because they use birth control. Now, the reality is we don't have bioidentical forms of birth control, right? We don't have bioidentical forms. And there's a lot of reasons why that is true.
Sure. If you're at least with that approach of like, let's stop, I mean, there is nothing that would support the body in stopping ovulation in a younger woman because that's not a natural state. Right. Yeah. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
Wow. And the risks and the side effects and I smoked when I was in college. I was on the pill when I was in college, you know, like, all
get
of
the 80s, you didn't like, smoke. You had to. It was part of the joke.
Right? It was the law.
Did you do stupid stuff?
So it's like, if I ever had any question of, you know, if there was an intention for me to still be here, there's lots of reasons why I could not be here at this point. Yeah. And so I think the conversation is important for younger. And then I think of, you know, you think of autoimmunity, you know, that just younger and younger and younger. And you know, the one of the reasons we're talking about this is, you know, autoimmune numbers, it's, you know, in women, we're like 75% of the autoimmune population. Hormones are directly connected. And so it just, now when I think of these young girls in high school already with autoimmunity, and then they go to the gynecologist and they're handed birth control pills for their acne, their cycle, their whatever. It's upsetting.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Because the 80s are over. We know better now. We should know better now.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it is for me, it's for me, it's a little bit of a dance because I also look at it and say, you know, because we don't have really good birth control, we also, it's like we have to weigh all of those. And sometimes we have to kind of go, okay, maybe I am going to do it, but I'm going to do the one that has the least impact. And, you know,
well, and to be fair, I'm not even talking about it for birth control for birth control.
Yeah, it's more for
I'm
when
we're talking
for
about
other
it
stuff.
For women that have hormone imbalance, young women of all ages that have hormone imbalances and are symptomatic, probably estrogen dominance or something.
Yeah.
And that's the band-aid that they're given. That's, I'm not even, because that's a whole 100%. Other episode we could talk about.
Totally, yes.
you know, and the I'm all about empowerment and all of that. But most teenage girls are not equipped to make educated decisions.
Yeah.
For, you know, or they're not thinking, all they're thinking is, I want the acne to go away, or I don't want to feel like I'm hemorrhaging once a month or be cranky or whatever their symptoms are that they're struggling with.
Definitely.
And so, you know, I just think that piece is really important. So I love that. So let's talk a little bit about this idea of, and not, we've done deep dives kind of in the past on, you know, the X chromosome and female hormones and that being, you know, one of the players, at least major player, as to why women have, you know, so much more autoimmunity than men. Why do you think though, in general, I mean, it's on the rise, like it's just rampant.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a whole bunch of things. I mean, I think definitely we know that estrogen is immune stimulating, progesterone is immune calming. So, you know, depending on where you are in your cycle, what your natural sort of fluctuation is. And then most of us see an uptick in our 40s because we are by definition estrogen dominant because progesterone's always already on the decline. And so if we don't replace progesterone, we're more likely to do that, which is why you see an uptick in that autoimmune activity at those big hormonal periods, right? So if we take that premise, we know that women to men, it's like, you know, 10 to 1, women to men in most autoimmune conditions. The other thing you have to look at is what could be the other drivers? So we know viral infections, bacterial infections, mold toxicity, chemical toxicity, right? Take the hormones and sort of move that over because we can't, it's like we can't necessarily change that per se. We can modulate it. But the other thing is as far back as 250 years ago, the vast majority of what we were exposed to on the planet was organic just by default.
Right.
Really, Bronze Age. So like, we're going to go real far back. Bronze Age is the first time man innovated past nature, right? So literally, and then if you jump forward to World War II, that's where we see this dramatic uptick in toxins. So depending on which thing you read, you're looking at like 95 to 100 and something thousand chemicals that have been added to our environment, some of which are hormonal, right? So they look like hormones, particularly estrogen to the body.
Right.
And depending on how efficient we are at kind of getting rid of those things, we will have a higher estrogen burden. And depending on how we detox them, some of those pathways can amplify changes to the DNA and other things. So we can see higher uptick in cancers, and immune modulation is going to be part of that. And so part of what I think is going on is we just have too many toxins that look like hormones in our body that bogs our body down. And then if we are a woman who already leans a little bit one way or the other, we get extra burdened, right? And then all we need is a stacking of something else, another illness, too much stress. You know, there's, it's never just one thing, you know, everybody's always like, I want the silver bullet.
I know. I remember when I got really excited about functional medicine and was like, I want to find my root cause, you know, singular. Like, oh, oops. And I think we have as women that compounded, you know, we've got the estrogen, we have very different immune systems from men so that we can carry babies. It's set up that way, you know, and then the end, you know, toxins in general, endocrine disruptors, you know, estrogen. And I'm not bad. The estrogen is a good thing. It's not a bad thing, but also we have a higher percentage of body fat.
Yep.
Where do we store our toxins? In our body fat. And so take somebody like me, perfect storm. You know, I am literally, I'm not just not a good detoxer. I'm a collector. Like,
oh, 100%.
I've ever met. My body is like, oh, let's keep that forever. Mm-hmm. So add that to, you know, even though I was a petite, you know, I was skinny when I hated that word as a kid. Well, but it makes perfect sense in hindsight because now I know I had celiac and I wasn't absorbing nutrients. You know, I ate like a, you know, truck driver. but like these things all compound. Right. And so, and then take somebody in with the shifts of hormones, those times in life, and I don't know, somebody with higher estrogen who's put on belly fat, then that's hard to, you know, it becomes this cycle. It's like the perfect storm, really, of if, like you said, if it's not autoimmunity, it's going to, you know, it's cancer, it's metabolic syndrome, you know, all of the things. But the good news is we can actually take action to prevent and or fix. And that's what you and I do all day long.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's understanding that, you know, A, you got to look for all those things. You have to look for the toxins, the gut health, your hormone balance, because how you felt when you were 20 and what was going on with your hormones is going to be different than 35. It's going to be different than 45. Absolutely different at, you know, your 50s, because I'm 54. You know, so
we're the same age. Yeah. You look like a baby.
So the reality is we have to respect the fact that our hormones are different throughout the month. They're different throughout our timelines of our life, and especially like when we have babies and things like that, we have a lot of immune regulation that happens. And so we see those incidences sort of changing that. And I think once you understand that, and you understand that you can also get to the baseline problems, like get rid of the toxins, fix the gut, you know, get rid of mold, all those things, get rid of all the things that we look at functionally, then the total load comes down, right? It's never ever like, oh, I just don't do that anymore and it goes away. It's usually total load.
Sure.
And I think that's the kind of home message people need to have, is that there is things you can do. You don't have to be stuck here. I feel better today than
me
I did
too.
35. You know?
I wanted to say, you know, as we're saying the cycles, right? Monthly, decades, whatever. I was going to clarify that you weren't saying being in your 50s means you should feel worse than you did when you were younger. I didn't think I would live to see 50, and I definitely feel better than I did in my 30s and 40s,
without a doubt.
But I've done the work. I'm always doing the work, right? This is a constant process because we're bombarded. Mm-hmm. With toxins, stressors, all the things. And so when we create that resilience, that's what can make your 50s like the best.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. That is true. Cause I truly do feel significantly better. You know, I have cardiovascular fitness is equal to, if not better than when I was in my late 30s. You know, my strength isn't quite what it was, but I was powerlifting in my early 30s, right. But I had pretty significant strength for my age. You know, I sleep better, my mood is better, all of those things are better. And a lot of it means that you have to do that lifestyle groundwork. And again, it's lifestyle. You don't get to do it and then you're done with it.
Right.
You know, which is where the challenge really comes in, because most people, that's not how we're wired as a human to work. Right.
The checklist mentality. I did that.
Yeah. It's like we have to keep sort of reiterating that and sort of putting the effort in, because but if we do that, we get a better life on the other side, which I think is important for people to understand wherever they are in that timeline, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to circle all the way back to the beginning of the conversation of we're living longer. You know, it's not about being alive. It's about living well, right? And it's the back to that health span I have no interest. I watched my grandmother pretty much lay in her bed for like a decade.
Yeah.
Just, and her body was healthy. Her brain was gone. And it was horrible. Like, I don't want to do that. No. Mm-hmm. I want to live like this until I'm done. And then I'm done.
Exactly. Yeah. I would say that risk for dementia, Alzheimer's is a primary driver for most of the people that my team and I see. You know, they're like, that scares me probably more than anything else, you know?
Well, and I say use it as a motivator because all of these lifestyle areas, again, it's for what you're doing to prevent dementia and or reverse dementia is the same as what you're going to be doing to prevent or reverse autoimmune symptoms and live that healthy life. That's one of the things that I think is so exciting and empowering. You know, it's a total opposite from like diagnosis pill, right? Like, let's find this diagnosis and this is what you need to do. If we're addressing those lifestyle areas where, you know, you mentioned, you know, cardiovascular fitness, like all the things, wellness is wellness.
Yeah.
What it comes down to.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's, yeah. And those are diseases of lifestyle. And so, yeah, we have to just look at it that way and take proactive steps for sure.
Yeah. You know, I love it. Yeah. Which is, again, where we do have power. Even if you've seen a doctor like Betty has seen, or like I have seen, they don't know everything. And you need to just keep moving until you find the right support.
Yeah. And it is, you know, I always think kind of like duly noted, right? Everybody's, you know, everybody has the opportunity to share their knowledge, right? And I by no means know everything. And I have changed my tunes on things when I've learned something new that challenges my bias. But it does take kind of a team. So I think that's the other thing is because our medical system is designed as, you know, the patient really isn't driving it. The practitioner isn't driving it. It's a bean counter and a actuary in the insurance company that's telling you how you're going to get treated and what's going to get done. When we removed that relationship, it really left, you know, people really not understanding that they have control and you probably need a team of individuals to really help you that, you know, we don't have a Swiss Army knife. We don't have a Swiss Army knife practitioner. That's the king of everything.
Right.
So you have to proactively look for that in your life because the Western medical system is not going to find that for you.
I love that. And we all deserve a team and the healing and the support that we can get when we create a team and find the correct team is amazing. And nobody has all the answers, you know, for sure. And so I love, you know, I work in conjunction with my partner a lot. He's a physician. He's a fantastic functional medicine physician, but some of his patients need support, right? Yeah. So he's not coaching them. He's not, you know, we work in different ways to support people in different ways. And I say, you know, find what resonates and then build your team.
Yeah.
I love that. And find practitioners who want to be part of a team, right? I think that's a great indicator when you are meeting with somebody or going for a consult. And if they're like, they have all the answers, I would maybe move on and try to find somebody else that wants to be part of your team. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I always tell people, it's like, if you had to rewire your house electrically, you're not going to go hire a handyman, right? Because a handyman just like, he'll put a doorknob on, might put a new faceplate on, but you're going to hire a master electrician.
Right.
You know, so your medical team or your healthcare team needs some master electricians and a master plumber and that kind of thing. And, but you also need that person that is helping bridge the gap, because the truth is you could have all the fancy tests in the world. And I tell all of our patients this, you could have all that stuff done. You could get to and understand the root cause, but it's in the day-to-day execution of what you need to do to repair and improve all those things. And then keep it is where the rubber hits the road. Knowledge doesn't.
That's why I have a job, right?
Yeah, it doesn't have, you have to have action.
Right. Right. It's not a lack of, if we could all just read a book, like I would have never gotten sick or I would have healed quicker. Right. Yeah. And so I love that, you know, we have this amazing community of people to give the support and be that team member that people need. You know, it's the how to in your life that is, you're not finding that in the book, right? It's like, oh, I read I should do this thing. I don't know how to get that done.
Yeah.
So I love that. That's the perfect segue into our final question, which is, according to Betty, what is one step that listeners can take today to start to improve their health?
Oh my gosh, there's so many things I would love to say.
I know, it's such a hard question.
You know, so here's the thing that I really think is, like, we identified toxins are, you know, they're ubiquitous. You know, I wrote a book 12 years ago about detoxifying, but the truth is you go through, like, let's say you do a big detox thing, you're going to retox as soon as you stop.
Yep. Oh, right? I love that. Yeah.
Right. So you're going to retox. There's no way to get 100% away. But that is the area across the board and all the big health concerns that if we look at it just slowly and incrementally, you know, we start with maybe the easy stuff. So maybe I go, okay, I'm going to look at my home cleaning products and I'm going to start replacing them with natural and organic, you know, cleaners that aren't toxic. And that you just sort of look at it as like I'm peeling back the layer of an onion. So I start with the outside and I do the first thing, mm-hmm. right? And then I stop buying my water and plastic water bottles because I don't want microplastics and all that other stuff. And then I'm going to go, okay, the next thing I'm going to do is look at my body care products. And if we just slowly peel back the layer of that onion, you're still going to get exposures. You're going to walk outside, you're going to walk in your house, which is actually more toxic than the air outside. But if we can do the things that we have some agency over,
yes,
we're going to start taking the load away and it becomes something that becomes sustainable. And also if you're a mom or a grandma or something like that, you're also going to teach through example to your family. Our children don't do what we tell them to do. They do what they see. So yes. You also help implement healthier things in the next generation, which will actually help change the planet. You know, we cause most of the problem, our generation before us and us, right? So we need future generations to recognize that we can actually clean it up. And I think looking at it because it's empowering, not overwhelming, is really important.
I love that. And to highlight what you had said before, it's the reducing that total burden, right? We're never done cleaning up toxins. We're, you know, you should never be done reading labels. but when we just manage step by step, and I love that, you know, you highlighted, look at how much you got in there in that one step, you know, but by starting in our home, which is typically more toxic than out and about in the world, and we don't think of it that way, we really can empower ourselves and do it in a way that's not overwhelming. And I love that you know, there is no, the right first step is the step that you can successfully take. So start somewhere painless. And, you know, I always, and again, it's not about perfection. You know, I had one client, she did everything, cleaned up all the things. And then I said, what kind of shampoo are you using? And she said, I'm not telling you because that's non-negotiable. I was like, that's fine, because you have literally cleaned up every other exposure in your home. So it's not about perfection. And I think so many of us ended up in this pickle that we're in because we're perfectionists. And so giving ourselves a little grace of, again, that better is better, is a good thing. And it's just like the rest of the lifestyle stuff. We're never done. I love I'm going to quote you. I love that you're going to retox, because we are.
Yeah. As soon as you walk out of your house. And perfectionism in itself has its own level of toxicity.
It's another toxin. Yeah.
Yeah. It's another toxin. It's just, it's a different kind of burden. But yeah. So the less we see it that way, and the more we just see, I'm doing something incremental every day, just like learning math. I hated math. Right. But you know, it all compounds on each other and you get better at it, you know, and it was always, every time I went to college, it was always the last class I took. I'd leave like all the other ones.
My daughter.
Like, okay, now I got to do statistics, like PhD program. Last class was like,
got to do it.
Statistics. And that was the only one I was like, cause I, you know, but I understood it was incremental, you know? And so they compound. So everything that we do compounds, and that's the way to look at it.
I love it. I love it. So for people that are listening on the go, which is how I tend to listen to podcasts, where's the very best place to find you?
Yeah, thank you. So I have Menopause Mastery Podcast, and I put one out every week. And you can always find me at bettymurray.com. And the last, or I'll spell it BettyMurray.com. And so either one of those places, but I'm obviously podcasting once a week too. So,
and I say, check out her podcast. It's amazing. And you'll learn, continue to learn a lot, which is fantastic. Betty, thank you so much. You really gave us a lot to think about today and a lot of gold.
Good. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Julie. I'm excited to be here.
For everyone listening, remember you can get the transcripts and show notes by visiting inspiredliving.show. Hope you had a great time and enjoyed this episode as much as I did. I'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to Julie Michelson's Inspired Living with Autoimmunity. Did you enjoy this episode? Please like, share, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. If you'd like to get a transcript of this and every other episode, just head on over to inspiredliving.show or click on the link in this episode's description. There, you can also find everything we discussed in this episode, including links and information about our guest. You can even send in your questions to be answered by Julie in a future episode. That's inspiredliving.show. Until next time, this is Julie Michelson's Inspired Living with Autoimmunity podcast, helping you take your power back.